All right, so it's my great pleasure to be here with you today, and I may, just disclaimer here, I do have a disclaimer, I may jump up and down during this presentation. I get so excited. So first of all, I would really like to commend these three very brave people who showed up today to do this presentation and really showcase the amazing stuff that's going on in Minnesota around the Omaha system. It is phenomenal, and we are very lucky. So I would also like to sincerely thank my co-authors, and they include Oladimeji Fari, who is not here, but was one of our PhD students from the Institute for Health Informatics and who did a lot of our methodology development work with us at the Omaha System Partnership for Knowledge Discovery and Healthcare Quality. Also, Dr. Carolyn Garcia here in our audience, co-investigator on, or PI for one of the studies that I'll be presenting. Dr. Elaine Darst, who is not with us, also a PI in a study I'll be presenting. Dr. Madeline Kerr, a colleague on several studies and a major mentor for me in my career, and also a co-investigator and leader in the Omaha System Partnership, David Radosovic, statistician and epidemiologist par excellence, who is really helping me with rigor in a lot of the studies that we've all done together. And then Dr. Wei-Sang Hong from the University of California, San Francisco, in the back of the room, who is the PI on one of the studies that I will be presenting. So a thousand thanks to you all. No relationships to schools. Okay, so you know a lot about the Omaha system already, and I'm going to skip all these slides because I have way too many slides for this 15 minutes, but we do have this Omaha System Partnership for Knowledge Discovery and Healthcare Quality. It is the first research center of its kind. It is created around a standardized terminology, so a standardized data set. And it consists of multidisciplinary scientific teams at the University of Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Istanbul University, affiliate members from over 15 countries, people like yourselves who are interested, who might have a clinical question you want to ask, people like language experts who help us with translations, anyone who has a clinically relevant question or a data set that would like to have some analysis done. And then we have this wonderful warehouse where if there is a relevant clinical question, we can go to the data and ask the question. So today, actually, there are four studies that I'm going to present in this very short time. I might as well just jump up and down right now and get it out of my system. So, descriptive study of problems experienced by community-dwelling adults with schizophrenia, a comparative study of public health nursing services and outcomes for adult and adolescent Latina mothers, and an analysis of hearing assessments for firefighters. So does this give you sort of a clue about the breadth of information and populations that we can access when we have a shared language that can communicate meaning? And what we get out of every single study, ladies and gentlemen, is a new voice for nursing and a new voice for people, patients, populations, clients that we have never had before. I get excited. All right. So my colleague, Dr. Darst, is working with a community. She had a community clinical setting, which is really a phenomenal place for adults with schizophrenia. And she takes students out there all the time. This is not in our fair city of St. Paul, but our neighboring fair city of Minneapolis. and this place is under the gun. They're gonna, like, they've got these folks living independently in this beautiful setting where they get just the right amount of support so that they can survive independently. And what do they do but they're gonna cut? Because these folks have no voice, right? So they're gonna cut the funds that make it possible for them to stay independently in the community. And so Elaine is feeling like really compelled to make a difference for this setting where she's the preceptor for the students in the community. And she decides we have to show that document that the state is using that says how much money these folks get is not accurate, is not good enough. We need a comprehensive, holistic assessment of these folks. We need to use something like the Omaha system. I mean, this poor lady can't walk unless she has an assistive device, and now they're taking away the funds that would have someone help her carry her lunch tray so that she can get her food. it's just nuts. Anyway, so Elaine worked with one of her students and this place, and the student did a structured interview using the Omaha system. And the purpose of the study was to evaluate the use of the Omaha system for assessment of community-dwelling older adults with schizophrenia, and Elaine obtained IRB approval for this from our institution. Her results showed that the Omaha system was able to describe the complex problems that really were keeping this person in this facility. And the Omaha system did this comprehensive, holistic, and standardized job that it always does, and identified 8 problems that this person had that made this person need to live in this community. Income, no money. Neighborhood workplace safety, no place to live that you know, if you're on the street, that's not safe, right? Abuse, risk for abuse, physical activity, mental health, cognition, nutrition, and substance use. The areas of greatest concern, and the student did KBS ratings for all of these problems, were mental health, cognition, nutrition, and substance use. For the mental health assessment, the client had a 2 in knowledge. Remember that we rate from 1 to 5 for each of these 3 ordinal, Likert type ordinal scales. 1 is the lowest, 5 is the highest, 2. This is minimal knowledge. This client with schizophrenia had some knowledge of their signs and symptoms, but poor knowledge of the impact of those signs and symptoms on his or her life, and a minimal understanding of positive coping skills. That's a 2 in knowledge. For somebody with schizophrenia, lifelong diagnosis, this is not somebody who's clued in to what's going on. But 4 in mental health behavior. Why? Because they're med compliant. They're medication compliant because they're in a supportive environment. So this person can regularly access their mental health meds and services under the supervision of the staff. The behavior rating is usually appropriate behavior for, because of the setting. Status, once again, 2. Why? Because they still have symptoms of mental illness severe enough to warrant 24-hour care setting. Vacillating levels of anxiety, depression, agitation, and psychosis, 2. Severe signs and symptoms. This person is safe, and the community is safe because they're in this setting. So this structured living situation contributes to patient stability. The KBS ratings show the differences in the dimensions of functioning, not just, oh, they're okay here. No, they don't know anything about their illness. They do not know enough to help themselves, but they can manage because they're here. The differences in these dimensions of knowledge, behavior, and status may indicate that probable patient function level without support. And so Elaine is all about developing an algorithm to assess the risk of decompensation using the KBS ratings. And then, all right, so let's give a hand to Elaine Darst, who's just finished the study. We're hoping that her student, I think she's either an MN student or a bachelor student, a pre-licensure student anyway, we're hoping she'll be able to publish this. Now I'd like to introduce the study that Carolyn's the PI. And Carolyn, if you want to just come up here and do this talk, you sure can. I'll go ahead, but you know, stop me anytime. Stop me anytime. Okay. So Carolyn is working with a colleague, Diane McNaughton from Rush University, and a research team to look at public health nursing outcomes for adolescent and adult mothers with and without the mental health problem. And the reason that Carolyn's interested in this is she's a researcher who looks at adolescent Latinas and their mental health. But there's a background study that's pretty interesting and compelling that gives us a little why should we be interested in this. And this is one of the studies that St. Paul Ramsey County worked on with us and our research team. This is the health literacy study that was presented this summer at Nursing Informatics 2012. The knowledge rating scores are a measure of health literacy. So if you are interested in the concept of health literacy in your communities, you can go ahead and use this knowledge score as an observed measure of health literacy. The definitions match. And you can say, well, what is our health literacy of our population for all of our different problems? And this data, separated out by four racial ethnic groups, Asian being the blue, African American being the red, Hispanic Latina being the green, and European American being the purple. Those four groups stratified out before public health nursing intervention. And what do we have but a pattern by race ethnicity, with Asians the lowest, African Americans next, then Latinas, then European Americans. After public health nursing intervention, what happens? Health disparities go away. For these problems, we no longer have the stratification by race. We have a pattern by problem. This is beautiful. This is what happens when public health nurses visit people. Their health literacy improves. What's the worst problem over there on the left side? The lowest dip is the mental health problem. Carolyn, does it surprise you? No. This is why you are interested in it. This is why you have this research agenda. And guess what happens after public health nursing intervention? Those Hispanic Latinas are at the top. So we're working with moms in trouble, high-risk mothers, and who benefits the most? The Latinas. So, based on these findings, we wanted to learn more. Nested block pretest post-test design. Blocking factors include age of client, mental health problem. So four different groups, adolescents and adults with and without the mental health problem. Using generalized linear mixed models adjusted for number of problems, length of service, number of visits, and outcomes in change in KBS. For knowledge, each of these four groups look alike. In fact, the lines are on top of each other. Everyone improves. We go from a baseline below basic knowledge to way above basic knowledge, and everybody's improving the same. And we're all improving statistically. Once we get to behavior, we see two different groups. The folks on the top, the purple and pink, those are the folks without mental health problem. The folks in the bottom are the folks with the mental health problem. So immediately, we're going to see this is what happens. It's harder to do things the way you want to do them when you have a mental health problem. And this just, bloop, there it is in the picture. Folks with mental health problems are challenged. Public health nurses make a difference. And in particular, with these behavior problems, we saw the mental health adult clients improving more. Status, once again, you're not as well off if you have a mental health problem at the beginning. Look at that. But we can make teens with mental health problems look the same in status as everybody else by the end. That's what public health nurses can do. Fantastic look at what can happen with this kind of intervention. An increase in the number of public health nurse visits was related to a status change in adolescence. So the more visits you had, the better off your status was at the end. What prevented or slowed down that improvement in status was the number of problems. So if we're dealing with a multi-problem family, it's just harder. Doesn't mean we're not going to get there. So a big hand to Carolyn and her team. Thank you, Carolyn. And finally, Dr. Weisei Hong has a very beautiful survey. Would you like to present? No? It's not. It's a study, not a survey. Madeline and Weisei and I worked with Weisei's research assistant, Dahl. And we looked at firefighter hearing data. And we're doing that very thing that Amy Litton and Kathy Gagne would like to do with the KBS data. We're taking those indicators and populating KBS with them. And so this is an actual clinical data of hearing inspections, as well as questionnaire data from a research study. correlational study following data transformation. So this is about noise-induced hearing loss of firefighters. This is one of the most prevalent occupational injuries in the United States, but there are limited data from workers. So can you imagine being a firefighter and those sirens? Can you just imagine this? I mean, and if you're macho, would you wear hearing protection? Probably not. Anyway, we have to put ourselves in those big fireman boots. Data are needed to describe the extent of noise-induced hearing loss and to measure outcomes of hearing loss. And then the other thing is, in occupational health, Madeline and Wee-Sang, maybe you can comment, how frequent is it that they use an electronic health record for occupational health? It's just hardly even thought of yet. Yeah. So these you've met now the leaders in electronic health records and standardized data. They're in the room here with you. New data standards and electronic health record systems offer technology solutions to inform the information gap. Knowledge, defined as the ability of the client to remember and interpret information, 1 to no knowledge, 5 to superior. And we used an algorithm from the data set. There were 4 questions in the data set. The firefighters had to answer 4 questions. So if they got all 4 right, that became a 5. If they got 3 right, 4. 2 right, 3. 1 right, no, 2. 1 right, 2. And then none right, 1. No knowledge. So ran the algorithm and found out that at the baseline, the mean score was close to adequate knowledge. So these folks, we are guessing, we're inferring from this, that they pretty much had adequate knowledge about hearing protection. Their behavior, however, was a little bit different. And we averaged 2 pieces of data from the research data set. We looked at their self-report of hearing, percentage of time that they used hearing protection when they were exposed to loud noise. We averaged those and we came up with a percentage number and we just blocked those out into 5 different pieces. And so we ended up with an average score of 2.22, which is very close to minimally acceptable or minimally appropriate behavior. And this only 12% consistently used appropriate hearing protection devices more than 80% of the time that they were needed. Status. This is the actual hearing test. 1, extreme signs and symptoms to 5, no signs and symptoms. And we graded their hearing tests according to the World Health Organization standards for poor to great. And their mean score for their status was minimal signs and symptoms, 4.39. So why would they change their behavior if they don't have a bad hearing problem at the baseline? They don't know that they're inevitably going to lose their hearing. But anyway, so we looked at bivariate correlations among these variables. So how are those knowledge ratings, those behavior ratings, and those status ratings related? And we find out that there is a significant positive relationship between knowledge and behavior. So those folks who had better knowledge scores actually used their hearing protection more often. But there was no significant relationship between knowledge and status. So really to get to how can we get firefighters to use their hearing protection, we have to go from knowledge to behavior. And one of the things that was so exciting for me about this study was that this was new knowledge for Wee-Sang and Madeline. And they know everything about hearing protection and noise-induced hearing loss. So the fact that they had a different model in which to arrange the data and to ask the questions was helpful to them in advancing knowledge about hearing protection. Do you have any more you'd like to say about it, either one of you? There is publication about this, and it was published in July. So, do look it up. Bring it next time you get an autograph. Okay, thank you very much to Wee-Sang and Madeline. How am I doing on time there? Okay. All right, so, realizing the goal, I'm going to jump up and down again. Use of a standard shared interface terminology enables large-scale population health research across settings, populations, practices, languages, and countries. I have colleagues in Norway. I just came back from Norway. There's public health nurses there using this for their community assessment. We compared Norway to Minnesota. It was astonishing, the differences. This is really important work, that we can come to some sort of language that we can share. Working together in partnership, this practice-based research partnerships are an optimal environment to enhance practice, evaluate programs, measure outcomes, improve population health. I'm really excited about a study that Diane is doing, that she's
just kicking off.
We just started it. We're working with, we're doing an evaluation of their efforts up there at the community level. She was kind enough to include me in the grant, and she got it. Anyway, it's just so exciting. Thank you very much. Bye. Join us. Everyone's welcome to join us. No cost, no obligation.
Questions for Karen? Comments for Karen? Or Doug or Madeline or Carolyn?
I just want to clarify. You're saying that folks have taken data that they've used with different models and collected with different interviews and assessments and then kind of made judgments about the knowledge, behavior, status, sort of the parallel.
Right, we converted an existing data set using algorithms. So we worked with a large data set and created these, because the Omaha system has a hearing problem. And that hearing problem sits in the same level. I mean, this is like saying, well, now I can talk to you about my heart condition and my hearing problem and my smoking problem, all using the same metric. So I'm a 3 with my hearing, I'm a 5 with my income, but my smoking is a 1. You know, having this metric makes the whole concept of health sort of a unified whole.
I think to clarify too, Karen, and we have kind of misinterpreted the question, there are some counties that are using the Omaha system, their public health nurses are using that, versus other data that are existing that are maybe the Omaha system is applied to those data so that they can come into your larger database. So there's both ways to enter
right.
into your
Right. You can enter from any direction. Yep.
But when we're talking about 10,000 users, et cetera, those are folks at the point of care. Those are people employed at Ramsey County, at Ottertail County, at, you know, all these different places that are actually using it with whoever their client is, individual, family, or community.
Well, I haven't been around. Maybe as long as Karen, just a little less long. But nursing minimum data sets, I'm thinking. You know, all the discussion that we've had over the years about the need for a nursing minimum data set. Thoughts about that?
Nursing minimum data sets include diagnosis, intervention, and outcome. And they don't specify what tool to use for that. So, but hopefully one of the standardized terminologies that is recognized by the ANA, of which Omaha System is one. So it is one of the essential components of the nursing minimum data set. Are we saying?
It works.
Yeah. I just want to make a comment on a paper we published, and I learned a lot. I think a few months is a genius anyway. It was a great place to work with her and knowing about and learn about the Omaha system. And it's the journal reviewers that I don't know whether they understood our study, but anyway, they accepted our paper. And the comment was that it is a very complicated study, but well done. But from our staff, so we were very happy that at least we, how do you put it, distribute the knowledge of nursing terminology to different groups of people. So that was, I think, that's actually one of the major goals we achieved. And of course, we got publications too. We have about 325 articles, chapters, and books now listed on the Omaha System website under references. So again, it's a wealth of information with Karen, this one, you know, others. So please use that section of the website. Find references.
public health, try to use the Omaha system together to have shared record keeping and documentation that would be similar across our sectors. Has that been done by other folks in other places, the private provider primary care clinics, let's say, and the public health folks are doing using the Omaha system to interface with one another?
All I know is that we have the ear of ICSI, and we have actually active participation from the Chief Knowledge Officer of ICSI, who is very enthusiastic about transforming the ICSI healthcare standards, primary care standards, into the Omaha system. Now, keep in mind that primary care clinics typically do not have to document what they do. They document things like a dose of a prescription or a lab value or an immunization that was given. So there is this, you know, the time that when the time comes where a primary care provider has to actually document what they do in a PIC list, just like we do for public health nurses, then I think we're going to have the ideal tools in place for that to happen, because we will have the ICSI standards translated, and we will have that thing that can fit into any interoperable health record, which is what's missing in every single health record, is the place where the narrative goes.
Started the conversations at the federal level for the clinical care document, that the current structure that is set up for that, for electronic data exchange, is based on the tabs on the old style medical records like you see in clinics and hospitals. There is, you know, we have to look at where does our public health data set fit in either any of those different ones. And yeah, we could put problems in with the problem section, but their problem is listed off of an ICD-9 code, not a system problem like the Omaha system. So we are advocating to see if we could get a section within the clinical care so that we could feed that data up to them about the problems that the client is dealing with in the community, and then they could incorporate that into their care. Just like they could then feed to us the clinical data that we need to help them to manage and coordinate in the community.
The other thing is there are a number of nurse managed centers in this country where some of them call themselves primary care, some call them wellness centers. I mean, I won't even begin to get into that. But those people who are using the Omaha system are really doing a nice job. Now, if it's an NP, sometimes even a clinical specialist, they may well be using ICD-9 and CPT codes and the Omaha system.
Okay.
So it's not like they skip one or the other.
So it's double entry
there as well.
Well, Carol, it's two different things.
It's just the way the documentation is set up, but they're using both.
Yeah.
Just like in home care, if you're in home care, you're using OASIS and you're using the Omaha system.
Right.
It's not like double documentation, but you're using both.
See, my daughter-in-law is a PA, and you know, she tells me about they're really measuring behaviors and status, and as individual providers, their earnings are based on that. This is a Fairview University clinic, the Fairview system. So I would think, but their interventions are not. So if you saw a patient, even if it wasn't your patient, whatever their next lab test shows as far as their diabetes, even if you didn't deal with their diabetes, you are dinged if it's not at the right level. So it would seem to me that at least at the provider level, they are ripe for a system that would look at interventions as well as behavior
right, but providers are supposed to begin reporting patients' knowledge level. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know how they're going to begin to capture that in their clinical records, whereas we could give that information to them from the perspective of what we actually see the client's knowledge and their behavior and their status, because we can tell you one thing in the clinic, but what they actually do in the home that shows what their true knowledge is a different story. And we've really seen that as we've worked with an interdisciplinary practice that we have on falls prevention, where we bring students out into the home and they're seeing assessing those clients in the home setting as opposed to how they assess clients normally in the clinic setting. They really see the real picture in the home compared to what they're told in the clinic setting.
Let's give our speaker.